Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you lovely lot, and welcome to this week's edition of Tuesday Night Jaw, brought to you by the Distraction Pieces Network, the lovely, lovely podcast network that is a joy to be part of. Our Christmas do's coming up. I need to figure out how I'm going to get down to London for it, because I've been promised lots of sweets and chocolate wafers and stuff like that. So I really want to get involved in that. Pip knows how to throw a party. I reckon there's going to be party rings as well. Solid party food. Even though I can't eat them because they've got gluten in them, I'd take the hit for that. So there we go. We might have a Christmas party episode. Who knows? Anyway, that's the podcast network. I'm currently half watching Newcastle versus Aston Villa as I'm recording this. And we are in the sunny location of Denton, Manchester, which means one thing and one thing only. This week's guest is none other than the infamous Chris Eager.
You can't spell infamous without famous.
Famous.
And here I am, finally, after a week's delay, which is fair enough. It was nearly another day, but I said no, Matthew.
It was nearly another day because previous host Jim Smallman was very selfish and decided that he wanted to go for dinner with me. So Chris went and had a lovely curry.
Yeah.
And I went to have a lovely vegetarian Nando's with young James Smallman. And we're here and we're ready.
Yeah, my auntie made me a curry. It was nice. And then I took some glamour shots of the cat, which I'll show you later when we fancy new phone. That was good. Yeah, I put them on Twitter and get like 20,000 likes on those.
Yeah.
Which would be good.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, the reason why you're infamous now on this podcast, people might not realise because obviously we didn't put the live episode out that we did in Manchester. But it was a weird situation where we were talking about you and Jim had mentioned, jokingly made a thing of he's a northern man and he looks like he knows where to get good substances, and everyone was chuckling. And then the situation was that you appeared literally as we were talking about you with Shea Purser and Tony Storm, but people came unglued in the room because of the timing, and you were so bemused by the reaction.
Everyone apart from Jeff Ogden, who was asleep.
Yes, snoring.
Like, but I think me and Tony and Shay had a discussion when we walked in. We were kind of like, oh, we'll just have to try and like sneak in here now so no one sees us. We can get to the bar and be inconspicuous, and then everyone just fucking dives out the seats. I'm like, oh, Tony Storm's behind me. And then he's like, oh, you go, oh, great.
Yeah, I mean, Tony did a great job on Survivor Series last night, but given that reaction in Manchester, all I'm saying is
competition.
This time next year, you'll be on your own brand.
I'll be the new Harvina.
Do it, get involved. So that's kind of when you've got an in-person introduction, and now it's sort of stopped from there. But obviously, you have been doing a hotline with your little burner phone. That is, what is it? It's a Nokia. What?
Because
it's not a 5210 was the one. That was the classic.
Yeah, it's the one after.
Yeah, because it was smaller.
This has got Snake 2 on.
Yeah. 2.0.
Yeah, and the other games, which hang on, this is live.
Yeah.
We've got Snowboarding.
Nice.
Snake 2, Bumper.
Oof.
Pairs 2.
Yeah.
And that's it.
solid.
Yeah, I've never played.
Well, yeah, because mobile phones are weird, because we went through a phase where like they were quite big and then they went small and then they went big again.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it is a rock solid phone. So thank you for everyone that sent questions either via Twitter or on the phone. Hilariously, if you sent quite a long text message, it's taken Chris 4 messages to get through to read the question out. So we will be answering your questions later on. There's some good ones. There is also some ones that we can't answer. Sorry. Ask us in person, we'll probably answer it in person. But so let's set the scene, because me and you have known each other now
too long.
Yeah, I mean I've been saying that since the day I met you. 14 years.
Longer.
Did we ever cross paths when we were training?
Yeah, 2000. I've known you since 2004.
Oh my goodness, mate.
Yeah. That's a long time.
That
longer
is a real
than you
long...
thought.
Yeah. Because what happened basically was when we started training, there was Garage Pro Wrestling at the time, and then the start of Future Shock Wrestling, and there was a bit of a split between trainees.
Basically, Future Shock, if I'm going to be really honest, it was started out of spite.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's not sugarcoated.
Yeah. There was a big to-do, which we might get into, with the middleman Lee Butler.
And storylines and the such,
yeah,
yes.
And yeah. Show stealer Alex Shane.
Yeah.
And Future Shock was born out of that heated personal feud.
Yes.
But I think it's done pretty well. They're both still around.
It's been done really well. And it's quite funny because despite the people that started both promotions, we always all got on. Myself, you, Bailey, Gallagher, you know, and the sorts later on. But it wasn't until really I jumped over to Future Shock, like it was ECW, WCW, when I came to Future Shock that we started hanging out more. And it wasn't until then that me and you started mixing it up in the ring.
Yeah, so we should really address a question to answer this one.
Yes.
And it's from, hang on, it's from, wait a second, this is live, sorry for the dead air. It's from Jesse.
Yeah.
At Creative Bin Lord.
Strong.
If you want to follow him, you should. What's the most ridiculous thing you've been offered to wrestle in return for? Mm. So, ladies and gentlemen out there, fantastic listeners, I regale you with this tale.
I'll tell you what, let me set the scene for this, because this is one of our favourite stories in the world. So we used to do a few shows around the Northwest, and a show popped up in Bolton, and Egan and Bailey, Gallagher, then Toxic, and Cyanide, and a few others had gone across and were at the show. And it was a young lad that ran the show, and when I say young, he was a 15-year-old lad that ran a show with the help of his mum. So we get booked for this show. Bailey sorts it out for me, because me and Bailey were tag team partners at the time, and we turned up to the show, and the young man who does listen to this podcast and is a cracking lad, and I've seen him since, and he's a really good lad, but he was 15 at the time, and I was greeted by a young lad in a shirt and tracksuit bottoms that was going to be promoting this show. So, I mean, the omens weren't great at the beginning, but then it was myself versus you in a singles contest.
Yeah.
And I'll now let you take over this story.
Okay, right. So, it was kind of like, we arrived and we were told we couldn't be paid that evening.
I actually believe we got told during the break of the show, because we were first on after the break.
Yeah.
And he kind of said, I can't pay you, so if you don't want to wrestle, that's fine.
Yeah. But some people took that a bit, well, not well at all. We were a bit more malleable, flexible, and we were told, if you don't want to wrestle, that's fine. You can just walk away now, but I can't pay you. So, me and Matthew looked at each other for about 5 seconds. We our eyes met, and we both realised that we were still going to go on.
Yeah.
We went out there, we did a match, we did some moves, which we've never done since.
I believe the core of that match is based around hitting atomic drops on each other.
And an Osaka Street Cutter.
We'll get onto another story about that later. Also, we ended the match by embracing and saying that we were best friends. Yeah. And while we tried to get backstage, the entranceway was shockingly just a door. The rest of the locker room stopped us from trying to get through the door. So the four people in attendance in his work at Men's Club in Bolton got to see me and Egan try and break back into the locker room. As you can tell, it's going well.
Yeah, it's been a great night. We've barely broke a sweat, and we're backstage, and we're saying, right, and you know what? We've done a good job. We've done a good job out there. The lad was happy. He said, you know, I wish I could repay you. You know, I really wish I could give you money. To which I said, you know what? Get us me tea. Give me tea. As long as I get a curry and a naan from this takeaway next door, I'm happy. And he gave me £4. I went right next door. I got a tray of curry. I got half a naan. And I drove home a happy man.
You
that
did.
Night. I was fulfilled, baby.
You did. So there you go. We got paid. Well, Egan got paid in a curry.
I think he gave me £4.50.
Oh, what a good laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good laugh. We did have a laugh. We always had a laugh every time we wrestled. Was that the show as well where you did the infamous announcement of pasty and peas are going to be served at the interval? It's actually your favourite trick, isn't
it? Yeah, so as payment, well, as recompense for non-payment, good I did work. Take the microphone off him and do all the half-time announcements. Yeah. In the start of like a Tony Blackburn.
Yes.
Pasties and peas. Pasties and peas available at the bar.
Which has now become a thing, which we, if we ever get bored, we just say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and of course, we've locked horns in Future Shock.
Have we?
We have, because that's the Soccer Street Cutter story.
Oh, shit, yeah. Holy shit,
so
yeah.
So we had, I think we only ever had one singles. We had a couple of tags and stuff, because...
I thought the Osaka Street Cutter was
no,
that
No,
right?
no, this
what
is
What am
it.
I thinking?
So so we have me and you were having this match, and I remember at the time there was a certain promoter that wanted to book me for a relatively established British promotion. And he was like, I'm going to watch a match tonight, I'm going to take a look at you. So, I, you know, being a young man and with aspirations, I wanted to take the match quite seriously and whatever. And Egan comes up to me and goes, right, tonight I'm going to hit you with an Osaka Street Cutter. And I'm like, why? And then the worst thing about it, or the funniest thing about it, was you were insistent that it wasn't just going to be like a suplex over straight into a cutter. You were like, I'm going to suplex you. Put you on your feet for like a second or two and then study it.
Yeah. So, I wanted to look into that promoter's eyes and let it be known what I was doing.
And it was one of the funniest moments, because he does it and it felt like an eternity and he hits it. And we both like, I think we might have been at a double down or a thousand of that. And I just remember looking at the promoter going, never going to work there. And weirdly, I did get booked, so it was fine. But
I think it was during the heat.
Yeah, it wasn't even during the heat. We're really sorry, Super Delphin. We apologise. But we didn't get to wrestle a lot because of just, I think, just the way Future Shock was at the time. But obviously, I went away for a bit and then you actually... stopped wrestling yourself,
yeah.
Became a manager, which I think is where more modern fans or newer fans probably would have known you from before, until recently, since you knew now, made your return as an active professional wrestler.
Yeah, I think we'll come on to the manager thing later, because there's a really good question about like influences and things like that.
Mm.
But yeah, I did take
a
break.
We'll get on to the manager thing later, but let's talk about the new Chris Egan, because... You know, it's so here's the tough thing. But, you know, when we came in, I think it's fair to say that the scene was incredibly different, and what was needed to be able to get onto a show was significantly less to what it is now.
Yeah.
So how was that sort of adjustment period for you to come in from, you know, someone with nearly 16 years experience, 15 years experience, to then come in with a current crop of wrestlers that were, you know, competing at an incredibly high standard?
The first thing to do was just to forget about the past 13 years and just think of it as like a complete new start, because everything's changed. The way people look at wrestling, the way people approach wrestling, from training through to psychology through to backstage attitude, everything is just completely changed. So the first thing was to just like flush what I knew down the toilet and just rebuild. And hopefully, you know, some things might be the same and I've got like a head start on those. But blank canvas. So it was pretty good. And I was insistent that I didn't want anything like easy. And like, you know me, I'm a very like, what's the word? A very proud guy.
Yeah.
And I was happy to eat a lot of shit. And yeah. I was, you know, I was gobbling that shit right up. I was eating that much shit. So
I'd like to point out, this is metaphorical and not literal.
Yeah, it's just purely a metaphor. Like, so yeah, I was really insistent on doing it properly. Part of the reason I wanted to get back into it in the first place, because all these guys that like I'd wrestled the first time round, like your Gibsons, your Drakes, your Gallaghers, Soz.
We can call whatever we want, it's fine. Toxic, Toco,
all those people, like, they were doing so well and they'd improved so much and they were achieving these, you know, things they'd always dreamed of. But there was still a chance for me, well, not in Jack's case, but like...
Yeah, you know, Gibson and Drake is a great
even
example.
Even Sam Bailey, guys like that. There was still a chance now for me to be able to go back in and work with them again. And that was something I really wanted to do. And, like, more so, I felt at the back of my mind, like, I'd done pretty well at managing. Like,
I would go on record to say you did fantastic. You were, if not the best, one of the best in the country at the time doing it.
Out of all the two Northwest managers, I think I was the best one.
No, but there was more people on the scene, you know. Down south or in the Midlands or even in Scotland. And, you know, you transferred your skills that you'd learnt as a wrestler really well into management. You know, again, it's that thing of like, I've been through a similar transition in terms of transferring the skills I learnt as a wrestler to being either a ring announcer or a commentator. So I do think it's worth, you know, you shouldn't overlook that.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
But it was more so like, I still felt like I had something to give.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? And maybe, I don't know, maybe I was quite bitter in the way that I'd left wrestling the first time round. Because it was kind of like, if I was being really honest, I had justification for doing it, but it didn't sit well when I thought about it years later. Like, because it could be construed in my own head as me being like a stroppy child, but I had my reasons for it. Because wrestling was changing at the time.
So on that point, because this is something that's actually interesting, because a lot of people that leave wrestling do have bitterness. I personally had closure. Like, I always had closure, and I got the things that I wanted, and then I was happy to leave. And again, like, I didn't just leave wrestling, but I moved to the other side of the country, so yeah, I had, like, a lot of separation. But why do you think it is that situation when people do leave, they don't feel like they have that closure?
Yeah, well, like, the first time... Well, I'm not saying I'm going to leave again, but the first time round when I did leave wrestling was pre-boom.
Yeah.
But pre-boom, there was also inklings of, like, another boom. Mm-hmm. But the boom itself, this is going to sound really, like, conspiracy theory bullshit, like, and you might not get what I'm trying to say, but wrestling was changing.
Yes, it was.
A few people were trying to change it for their own benefits.
Okay.
And, like, make money off it. You know, and it felt kind of like exploitive, not only to the people that wanted to be involved in wrestling, but the people that were already involved in wrestling. It was kind of pushing them away.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's an interesting point. Do you not think that that's something that's happening now in terms of we're seeing certain companies who are becoming more prominent, that are more influential over the audience, and they are... So, for instance, when we came in, there was a very strong divide of the wrestlers / workers and the promoters, where now, which I think is to the benefit, I would like to point out, that there is a lot more wrestlers that are in control of either their own products or in control of creative. So it's one of them things of... I think that's quite interesting, because I think the people that are doing it now have done it to probably, yes, to benefit themselves, but it's been to the positive movement of the actual whole wrestling on a whole. Yeah. Whereas bringing it back to Britain, do you think is Do you think that sort of mentality of trying to make it a benefit them is what was holding us back before where we did actually break out and become a hot seed?
Yeah, definitely. At the time, there was so many wrestlers, but there were really none the quality and star power that there are now.
Yeah.
So I think now, whereas everyone was desperate for work then,
yeah.
I think in the tables have turned a little bit. The promoters now see how valuable these guys are,
yeah.
rather than the guys thinking, well, you know, these are promoters I have to work for, and
yes.
I've got to pet them, and I've got to work in, you know, FWA Portsmouth, I've got to work in yeah. TAP and Brawl and all the fucking every other promotion that was out there then.
Yeah, but I understand what you mean. There was like, because I had it. I was, you know, I always wanted to work for FWA before I walked away, and I was fortunate to do that. But now, like you say, it's that more of a. The wrestler is the thing that comes first.
Yeah.
It's that people pay to see the wrestlers.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and wrestling now, like, over here especially, compared to where we started and what we've, like, seen and experienced, it's so much better.
It is, isn't
it's
it?
It's so much better.
And, like, do you know what? I'm really happy that to have you on to say that because, you know, it's all well and good me saying that as you know, someone that is kind of on the outside, but you have seen the change in from what it was when we came in to what it is now. It is better, it's so much better, and that's not to say it's perfect
because
of course it's not perfect, and it doesn't. You know, there's things that need to get better, and there still needs to be improvement. But the comparison from 16 years ago is incredibly more positive. So
yeah, of course, and I think part of that as well is down to, like you said, there was almost like a divide between. The promoters and the wrestlers.
Yes.
I think back then as well, there was a bigger divide between the fans and the wrestlers.
Oh, massively.
Which will bring me on to talking about the hotline, which is one of the reasons I started it. Because there is really no divide now. Because if you think about it, like, any wrestler worth a salt will tell you, before they even thought about getting in a ring or going to a training school or whatever, they were a fan.
Yeah.
And I think people realise that now, like, we're all in the same boat.
Yes.
We're all fans, just some of us wanted to do it as a job, wanted to pursue it. We're all still fans. There's so much... Like, wrestling is a form of entertainment, and all entertainment is subjective, so everyone has their opinions on it. And obviously the natural forum for that is Twitter, message board. You don't know who the fuck you just go to UKFF anymore. It's all Twitter.
Whoa, hey, come on. Hey.
It's dead, baby.
Leave the memories alone.
But with any form of entertainment and that subjectivity, some people take it a little too far and it might turn a bit toxic and hostile, which is why I thought, you know what? I'm just going to get my own hotline.
Yeah.
We all used to see those fucking WCW, WF things that you could never call because you either lived in England or if you were allowed, it was too much.
Yeah.
And it might be... Anyone who's ever rang one of those fucking hotlines, just please get in touch and tell me, like, what happened.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah.
I'd love to know. Was it a recorded message? Did you speak to X-Pac or Golga or anything like that? I want to know. But I thought I'd just cut out, like, any thought of... form of hostility, quite out of the toxicity, just fucking ring me, talk to me. And like, people, it's been really nice. Like, people have like texting some good stuff, they've rang me. I've had fucking half hour conversations with people, but occasionally get the odd like really serious question. It's like, well, do I answer that? Because one, it's pretty like, I don't know, boring to talk about that all the time. And two, like, if I say something via text, someone's got me on record saying that, you know
of
what
course.
I mean? If you want to ring me and ask me what I've had for my tea, I'll fucking chat to you for hours, you know? It's just stuff like that,
yeah,
which is fun. But, like, again, just coming onto, like, that thing about, like, there being no real divide between fans and wrestlers.
Yeah.
I went to Tidal with Ethan Allen a few months, it might have been last month.
Yeah, it was.
And, like, my head was, I was having a proper brain fart that day, like, total... head was in the toilet, and I got there and I was sitting there in this cold venue and I thought, this is going to be terrible. But then, like, everyone turned up, you know, Hat Guy was there, Athers was there, the Ogdens were there, the raging piss cans, a lot of them, and, you know, being able to talk about, like, stuff that we liked about wrestling. Like, not even like bombarding each other with questions. Oh, what about this? What about this? I'm just like, oh yeah, that's fucking cool. Like, I like this. I like. Yeah. I saw this last week. Have you seen that? And it's like, oh yeah, this is pretty fun.
It does really make a difference, and you know, it feels cliche or it feels hammy, but it does make such a huge impact having people come and speak to us at shows in a positive way. And it's one of my favourite aspects of it. You know, I've done just come off the back of doing 3 shows in 3 days, and every single show I've had a conversation with someone, you know, who's in the audience or the fan, and it's been like a really positive interaction. And I enjoy that aspect of it as much as I do everything else I do with the job. And I think the reason why British wrestling got successful was there was a more... I'm trying to think of the correct terminology, but there was more of a line of communication between us as performers and them as the audience. And now there is this kind of accountability on both parts. Yeah. We hold each other accountable, and this the way that it should work, because wrestling isn't perfect, but British wrestling has become more about the interactions and being at the live event, especially when, you know, we went through the start of the boom period. And I think that was a really important thing to remember, that there was this connection with everyone.
Yeah, and it's good that, like, just to go back to what I was saying before about it people trying to sort of monopolise it and, you know, squeeze everything out of it. When that fell apart at the seams, the actual boom happened naturally. There was nothing forced behind it. It just, you know, it grew.
Yes.
It naturally grew, and that's why it's been so...
Of course it's a business, and of course we need to make money. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, it's a product for people to consume, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't listen to the people paying money to come to your shows and vice versa. So I think it has massively progressed, and it's good that, you know, there's still people like that. You've seen all iterations of everything this sort of happened. I mean, one of my favourite things about you is you are, you know, the scene in Forrest Gump where
I said this.
Yeah, and he said it the other day to me in private, and it's true. You know the scene in Forrest Gump where he just appears at really historical moments, and there's always photographs of him in that. That, ladies, gents, and everyone, is Chris Egan, because he has got the weirdest stories with, like, the people. I mean, do you want to tell your Shibata story?
I think I've told it before, but I'll tell you. Yeah, we ended up playing Mario Kart and Street Fighter, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
He was really excited to play as Takami Shinoku on SmackDown 2 as well.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I recently got a lot of attention for a CM Punk story. I was stood next to Christopher Daniels at the Coventry Sky Dome, just waiting to, like, drive him somewhere, and I got hit with a big bag of McDonald's rubbish, and I looked up and CM Punk had just threw it from, like, the bleachers at Christopher Daniels, but it hit me, and he was really apologetic. But you know what? He's a big star now.
Do you know
fuck
what?
That shit, you know?
Yeah, Coventry Sky Dome was the scene of a lot of places. I once had to hold Ulf Herman back from a brawl.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, we did.
And it was like, it was me, you, CJ Banks, I think, was there, and Danny Hope. Danny Hope was definitely there, because he's the pivotal person in this story. And we'd sort of turned up, and we were watching the show, and we went back to do the extra work and whatever. And as we were walking past backstage, AJ Styles was there, and he was warming up for his match. And as we were walking past, Danny Hope very loudly went, "How small is he?" Which is hilarious. And that's one of the reasons we love Danny. But do you want to tell him a sour story? Cause...
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That got a lot of attention as well. I don't know why.
Because it's Misawa?
Yeah, I mean, what else would have Misawa done in this situation? If I was Misawa, I would have reacted the same. But, he did a training seminar. When him, Yoshinari Ogawa, my bae.
He's your boy, isn't he?
And Kataro Suzuki.
Who's now a part of Stinger with
Ogawa,
Ogawa and Chris Ridgway.
Big ups, Riddy. Yeah, they did a training seminar in Manchester, the old Future Shock gym, and it was really surreal, like standing at the top of the stairs having, like, Misawa walk past you and his big white fluffy parka, which is pretty funny. But then the training session started, and all the NOAH trainers were there because they were filming it for Japanese TV. Because this tour was like a big
deal. Yeah,
yeah, it was a big deal. So they'd done Misawa and Ogawa wrestled Doug Williams and Stevie Knight.
That's
in front of like 50 people in Scotland.
What a combination.
I think that was like the night before or the night after.
Yeah.
But did this training seminar and all the NOAH trainers came and like they stretched us out and like we did a little bit of wrestling, and then Misawa deemed that none of us were good enough. Worth his time. So I just left. And then we spent the extra hour doing like moonsaults in the ring. And like Spud was there, Jack Xavier was there, like the original Jervis Cottonbelly was there.
Yeah.
Like, and we just pissed about. Oh, yeah. I was like, well, he's gone
because,
now.
Because Misawa's just left you and giving you the most damning review ever.
With shit. So, like, Doug's took him for a Mackey's or something like that. So, yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good,
but it was a really weird time because when we came in there wasn't the structures in terms of schools and trainers there was, and we did kind of have to be a bit DIY and learn, and we were fortunate. Yeah. So for every funny story like that, you know, people like Cassius Ohno and Chris Hero had come over and done seminars and actually really spent time teaching us certain things. I remember being at Chris Hero's seminar and learning a lot, sure. You know, and that's actually how I'd met Mikey Whiplash, and Mikey Whiplash has come and started training us and ended up learning off him. So it's fascinating with that time period that there was the bad ones or the bad situations, and then there was also the really good ones.
Yeah, like training that much and like being so immersed in wrestling, like there's always going to be situations that pop up that are like I think we've got a few from the old GPW school that we probably can't tell.
I think it sounds bad in some aspects, but I think it's important to point out how amateurish it was because the change is so important. And what's great is that we did have really valuable people in this country. For instance, Mikey Whiplash is one I mentioned. Damon Lee's another one. Obviously, Dom Travis is one. And there was other people that were here that did take an invested interest in our scene and were great trainers. And I'm sure if you speak to certain individuals throughout, you know, our time period, someone would give credit to someone else. You know, even people like Robbie Brookside popping in and out, it always really helped us. But it was that feeling of you kind of had this little snippet of how someone else did it. I mean, you mentioned the original Jervis Cottonbelly. I still remember when he went to Shikara and he wrestled in the ECW arena. And at the time, to us, that maze will have been like, I don't know, Enziguri and the Pope. Yeah, like, man. It was that far away. And when he came back and taught us all he learned, we were like, whoa!
Wow,
like
you flip from an arm drag. Oh my god!
Oh my god! What's that? You leave off one foot on a hip toss. Oh my god!
It blew our minds. And obviously, like we can say his name, like Tom, like I think, in my opinion, anyway, because no one had really done that at the time.
Yeah.
Like I think a few people have gone to the offspring of the power plant.
There was a couple of people, and obviously Dom went to Lance Storm, which was another one. But yeah, it was really the first in terms of our group that someone had
that experience and gone abroad and like not just trained but been put, like you got put straight into the mix. Like Tom.
And it was around about the same time that Claudio Castagnoli went over, because obviously Claudio spent time here, because his is an interesting story of he trained via seminars for the beginning of his career, and then he actually wrestled for GPW in a tag team match with his old tag team partner Aries, who did turn up in Shikara against Jerry Hayes and Damon Lee. Still one of his favourite matches, apparently. And then it was during that time period in Britain that he'd met Hero and then it had gone. That sort of stuff to us was super exciting. I still remember getting really giddy about being on a show with Doug Williams, and then fast forward to Wembley and I commentated on his last ever professional wrestling match for Progress, and it's like, it's crazy that,
man, I bet that was good.
It was fantastic, and I'm really flattered that I got to do that, and you know,
like I'll never forget the show I got to work with Sabu.
Yeah.
He was just asleep. Like, I was so good.
I remember that joke. Yeah,
he just lay there sleeping, and then he woke up, did his match, and then I didn't say anything to him, but he's pretty cool, you know, he's sleeping on the floor over there.
Yeah, and I think what's even great now is that, you know, with in terms of, you've got people like Rampage Brown, Leggero, the Vets. Pretty much, I'm going to miss someone and it's going to sound really bad, but you know, all these people that are super prominent within the scene, you know, even like people like Pete, obviously, and Pete's, you know, busy with NXT, but you know, Flash Morgan Webster, Mark Andrews, Eddie Dennis, you know, all these, I could literally list everyone, you know, Will Ospreay, Zack Sabre Jr. These people are accessible. Back when, if we were in the same period of time, that would have been like, yeah. Oh, it's a seminar because they're in town, and like it would have been super unavailable to us. But now it's super exciting for the younger generation that they get to learn off these people. And again, you know, it's not just the lads. You've got people like Tony Storm, who's absolutely killing it, and you know, Mako Satomura is here more regularly, and it's such an exciting thing. Personally, for me, it's such an exciting thing to see this generation have access to. Really, a really good education.
And even, like, the quality of people coming in from abroad just to wrestle one-offs. Like,
yeah.
Bowlers in town. Liger was there a few weeks ago. Well, not weeks ago, like, earlier this year. And, like, with a venue 10 minutes from your house and Jushin Thunder Liger's there, you're not below going to see Liger in the afternoon. Like, go. Like, study him, like, watch him. But...
And that's, I think that's a great point of, you know, we used to watch everything, and we were, you know, cheap imitation of a lot of things. I mean, I remember your Kobashi chops, mate.
Man, they were dog shit. Nah, fucking dog shit. Yeah,
look terrible. Yeah, suck to take.
Yeah. That's the Chris Egan story. That's the title.
That was just the Brit Rest 2005 story.
Look like shit, feel like shit. The Chris Egan story.
Yeah. But you know, we sat and watched a lot of Ring of Honor and a lot of TNA at the time, and you know, we watched All Japan and all these things, and you know, that's kind of like what we had our education on, which we will now lead into some of the questions.
Yeah, we better add. We've been talking far too long. Can't talk forever. We've got to answer some questions, haven't we?
Well, the first one. Oh, we've got. I'm going to lead it. Yeah, I've got me. You know, I'm professional sometimes. We did get asked about. We've done the what we've been offered to wrestle for. There was a question here that was saying about what is one of the worst matches we've seen? So we don't feel comfortable answering that, but we'll tell you about some of the worst matches we've been in.
Oh.
So I will start. My second ever match was the inaugural Crazy Cruiserweight, which was an 8-man scramble. Right, I'm going to try and remember everyone in this match because it's hard. Spud was definitely in there. Leggero was definitely in there, I think. Now I've said it, I'm now questioning it. Joey Hayes was in there. CJ Banks was in there, because I wrestled him. Danny Hope was in there. Jack Hazard was in there.
Was it Emil Statoshi?
No, Emil was not in there. Scotty Hex was in there.
Whoa.
So what's that? From 7, and then there was an 8th.
Hey, man. Keep talking. I'm going to find that out. I'll find the 8th, man.
So we had this 8-man scramble, and this was on the same show that Robbie Brookside wrestled Johnny Kidd in a British Rounds match, which was the first time I'd ever seen traditional British wrestling live in person. So I was 16. So go on, give me the names.
What year was the inaugural one? It's 2006.
Oh, it was just a match. It wasn't the tournament.
Yeah, I'm looking at it and you weren't on the show.
No. It wasn't the show, because the show, Crazy Cruiserweight. So it wasn't the show.
Oh,
it was it was a singular match on another show.
Ah, right. Oh, it was a qualifier, right?
No. It wasn't even a qualifier. No. So Joey Hayes came up with the concept of it and the name of it, and he was like, "Let's have an 8-man scramble and we can call it a Crazy Cruiserweight."
So it wasn't a tournament.
No, it wasn't a tournament. Right. It was just a one-off match with like. But yeah, Spud was definitely in there. Danny Hope was definitely in there. CJ Banks was definitely in there, and others. And it was just, it's rough, man. It's proper rough. And me and CJ Banks were 16 at the time, and we, like, basically got in to run a spot. And the end of the spot was meant to be me hitting a rocker dropper on CJ Banks. And Jack Hazard, as I hooked CJ Banks for the rocker dropper, just ran in. And, like, as he's running at me, I'm, like, shaking my head going, not yet, not yet. And he just pushed me off CJ and then did this terrible spot. But it was, oh, it was so bad. Because we were all clueless at the time. But, you know, it turned out all right for Leggero and Spud. So
yeah, they're all right.
Yeah, they've done all right.
What's Spud up to?
I don't know. Retired, I think. He's
still a rock star.
Yeah, probably somewhere. So that was that. I think that's probably one of the worst matches I've ever been in. Yeah, that was bad, that one. But, you know, it was my second ever match.
That's pretty good for a second ever match. And you were in esteemed company there.
Yeah.
So I have found the match.
Okay.
You weren't lying.
I wasn't.
Trying to impress people with me. I was in the match with Scotty Hex. Like, hey. Do you think you are? Like, okay, so
yes,
it was Scotty Hex.
Yeah,
who won?
He did win. Yeah,
he won against C Juice.
Yes, CJ Banks.
Delirium. I wonder who that is.
Who's that Delirium kid? What he's doing?
Danny Hope, El Higuero, Jack Hazard, Spud, and Chris Travis.
I didn't know if Trav was in it or not. Yeah, we had a me and CJ had a actually pretty. I think that one of the first things in wrestling we were really happy with was we had a tag team feud with Chris Travis and Scotty Hex, who were the original Project Ego, and we were alright with that. Indie as fuck, man. Like all these terrible indie moves, but at the time, you know,
Scotty Hex would go. Like at the time,
he was the Chris Canyon of Brit Rest. Like he was something that he'd come up with. I still remember we wrestled them during. I don't know if you were on that show. We did that show in Highton, where someone's beard got set on fire in a cafe. And it was really rough. And after everyone finished their match, they got in a car and drove 15 minutes down the road because we were worried that our cars were going to get nicked. And like, there was legitimately a point where we were worried about the heels would get stabbed because it was just this. Like, the venue had barbed wire around the top, and me and Juice wrestled Trav and Scotty on that. And it was about, we went about 5 minutes, but I remember Trav hitting the Mario stomp on us, which is where he'd line us up, sort of sat down and then double stomp both of us in one motion. And I remember that was one of the first matches. I was always the first one because that was always the easy one to take because gravity came in on the second one. So, but yeah, we literally finished the match and like jumped in a car and left before we got assaulted in Highton. So there you go. There's some of the worst experiences.
I don't think I was there that night. I'm glad I wasn't. Okay, I'll go for the same line as you. I won't say the worst match I've ever seen. And this was the Biggin in Wigan excluded.
Yes, by of course. The way. So that, it's a classic.
That probably is the worst match I've ever seen. Ooh. I was there live. I was there.
Yeah,
baby.
You were there, baby.
So we go back to the year 2006.
Yep.
And it was a show in Grimsby, which the Shining Light, Stevie Knight, there's a name for everyone.
I wrestled in Grimsby once, but it was for Sykes.
Oh, yeah. Won't go into that.
Whose ring was a boxing ring?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I took no bumps.
And if you wore, like, your white boots, all the mat would, like, bleed.
Yeah.
I think he died here or something.
I was an interesting show, that. I was in a battle royal, and I didn't take a bump in the ring, but I took a super kick off the apron to the outside because it was safer. So
it was a Stevie Knight show that he put on in aid of a local charity. He did a lot of charity shows. He's great for stuff like that, really a pillar of his local community. And me, Dave Rain, Sam Bailey and Jamie Flint drove down. Oof. In a car.
What a faction that is.
If you don't remember Jamie Flint, he did like a teenage boy.
It was alright. It was not a million miles away from Big Joe.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't a million miles away.
But he was like 20 something, and he always said he was
16. I'm only 15 years older. Yeah, and he used to come out with his national record of achievement, and his single, it was too big for him.
One of those like birth certificates that like Obafemi Martin's got.
Yeah,
like, he said his wrong age.
Excellent reference.
So we were in the car, and the day started really badly because Jamie Flint was sick in the car, all down himself, and like big commotion. But anyway, we got there in the end, and the match was to be Jamie Flint, Cobra Carl Richards, Chris Botherway, and his partner. British wrestling's own G-Man. The G-Man.
The G-Man.
The bloody G-Man. So yeah. Before he was like this boffin behind the camera, he was a sports entertainer.
He was.
And he was against me, Sam Bailey and Dave Rain. So in the match, there was about 10 people there, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe 10, 15 people. I think there was more, but that's just me being self-deprecating. So we had this match, and I used to do this like variation of a Regal Plex. G-Man, Billy Big Bollocks, was like, okay, I'm going to take it. You're going to hit me with it, and I'll be fine. So I did it, and I heard this like fucking... It's like someone shooting an elephant or something like that. I see like... he's trying to scare the cats out of me, going... Anyway, he was fucked. He was completely fucked. He rolled out the ring, to which I thought it was a good idea to follow him out and just, like, jump on top of him. Like, I did, like, a bump on top of him. So he was really upset. He crawled to the back and we finished the match. We got backstage. We all shook hands. Oh, it was all right. That's fair enough. Is everyone okay? Where's G-Man? And I'll never forget. We went outside this changing room. It was like a football club or something like that.
Right.
And it was a beautiful summer's evening. Beautiful. It was a big playing field outside, and at the bottom of the playing field, you know where the sky goes from like a bluish hue to like an orange?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was really nice. The sky was perfect. Dusk. Yeah. And on all fours on the grass, in like this, because I think it would rain the day before, in this big puddle of water on the grass, on all fours was G-Man just throwing up. And he was really, really throwing. He was heating all the water out of his body. And somehow, this lad in his electric wheelchair had managed to get onto the grass. And he was doing circles around G-Man while a kid on the back of his wheelchair, getting like a backy, just pointed and laughed. And he was pointing and laughing. It's like Nelson Munster. And G-Man's just heaving and heaving. This kid's just doing circles around him. We're all in raptures, and we're like, my God. So Sykes, I think he was doing the ring announcing, comes in and says, right, the Rumble, Dabbit Rumble, lads, and we have to go back out. So we're all in the ring, just the Rumble in it, like, we're all just, you know, punches and kicks, and G-Man's music hits, and he just doesn't come out. He just doesn't come out.
Oh, beautiful.
And, like, a couple of it, because I think it was, like, 20 people on the show, and everyone did, everyone did a turn in the Rumble, and I'd say... He would say if he was in about number 6,
yeah.
I'd say about number 12, someone was making their entrance. And as they were making their entrance, G-Man just stormed past him, pushed them out like he's got mud all over his pleather trousers because he's been kneeling in the grass and the mud. And he's covered in sick. Like, basically, he's covered in sick. And he just storms to the ring. Punches me like as hard as he could, like in the ribs and like the kidney. So I'm like, I double over because it's legit. He fucking leathered me, and he puts my head between his legs and does just the most unsafe pile. Like jumps about a meter in the air and does this pile driver. Could have broke my neck, and then he just fucks off, gets out of the ring, and goes.
Oh,
so he gave me a pretty good receipt. Like it could have killed me.
Magical.
So he was.
And that's pretty much been your friendship ever since, hasn't it?
Yeah, we did a show that year as well where we did a Rumble. I think me and G-Man had a pretty bad relationship in Rumbles because we eliminated each other like a cat's clothesline, and he was crawling along the floor like through the crowd, and I gave him a stomp to the head, but then the stomp like hit his head, and then his head just ricocheted off the floor.
All right. Do you know what? Considering you know the match you had at the Shard and Graps, I'm quite surprised they didn't end in badly. Yeah. Right, okay. What we're going to do now is we are going to take a quick commercial break, and when we get back, we will continue answering all of your questions.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
All right, we are back. Enjoy that. Last week, Pip just interrupted my very calm chat with Craig screaming about Squarespace. So I don't know what it is this week, but I'll listen to it back and I'll find out what it is. Right, I've got to ask this because it's the boss man that asked this. Scroobius Pip asks, is Tyler Bate underrated? Hear me out. I know he's hugely rated, but I've often paid more attention to those he's in with, but his 5-star with Pete, the 5-star tag with Undisputed Era, and the 5-star with Walter all screamed out the unifying ingredient. With that, who else was underrated in that way? So basically, who do you think's underrated? Pip thinks it's Tyler Bate.
I think Pip's got a point.
I know, I see his
point. Pip's got a point.
I mean, Pip, consistently throughout the history of Tuesday Night Jaw, I mean, he essentially made Jinder Mahal champion because he'd went on this big thing that he loved Jinder, and then he ended up being champion. So he usually gets stuff right. He gets stuff wrong as well, but, you know.
Don't hinder the Jinder, baby.
We absolutely do not on Tuesday Night Jaw.
No, I think, yeah, he's right, Tyler.
So who's underrated anywhere in the world?
Oh, man, who's underrated? Man, that's a tough one. I wish I'd have.
See, I think it's difficult because I think with the current climate of wrestling, even if someone is underrated, they are rated by someone. As long as they're, you know, within a prominent company, I think most people will see. I'm not going to go on a local or like Brit Rest level because I feel a bit uncomfortable doing that. But I think Miyahara in All Japan is super underrated. Purely based on the fact that he is a phenomenal wrestler and is Triple Crown champion, to my knowledge. I'm not watching All Japan in a while, sorry. But he has been consistently great for nearly a year and a half and 2 years, and I don't think enough people speak about how good he is.
Yeah. The only one that comes off my head, and I wouldn't say he's underrated in like the normal sense of the word, I like Cody.
I saw something today on Twitter about Cody being a phenomenal storyteller, and yeah. I understand what you're saying.
Like, a lot of people give Cody flack. Like, his run towards the end of his, like, New Japan tenure was pretty, like, I wouldn't say underwhelming, but people didn't really get behind it. And then, obviously, AEW is his company, it's his baby.
Yeah, it's baby, yeah.
So it's easy to look at Cody and be like, oh, well, he runs a company, yeah. He can do that. But no, fuck me, Cody's amazing.
It took a while, but yeah.
Yeah,
all right, cool.
Really good.
Good choice. Right. So, because we were both there, we watched the show together. What was our highlights from Tetsujin, the final show? I mean, apart from the obvious, we absolutely adored Luke and Ethan's match. My highlight was just, I think pretty much the whole show for me, because obviously it was the last one and we knew it was coming, and it was weird to finally get there and do it, but I spoke to Craig about it, and I spoke to Gaz about it, and for them that was the perfect send off for him. But what was is there anything that you really, really enjoyed?
Well, or? I'd never been to a Tetsujin show. Like the first one, I think I was struck down by a mysterious illness, scurvy or something like that, maybe.
Probably.
Second one, I woke up to, like, I had a really exciting day planned. I was going to go to work, finish work, drive to the show, have a few beers.
Yeah.
You see me pals, and then I woke up in the morning and some dosser had tried to steal my car. So the window was fucked, the alarm was fucked, it wouldn't drive. Like,
oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I actually do remember it, yeah.
The show was off.
Yeah.
I just had to sit alone and weep until everyone got back to Manchester and I could still have a drink. But this one, oh, my God, yeah, it was great, wasn't it?
It was.
Really enjoyed it. the venue is perfect. Like, it would have been better if it was in Liverpool, of course, because that's
sentimentally. Yeah,
but man, it was great. My highlight, David Starr and Akid was pretty boss.
It was all right, wasn't it? Good.
Yeah, that was a bit of all right. Tim Thatcher, just his body, his face, his his presence, like, of course, is a highlight for me. His black flag trunks. Oh, man, that was great. Like, I think, David Starr and Akid was, fucking great.
Belting. Talking of underrated, does Steve Blackman get the respect he deserves? I don't know if that's, like, critically or as a force of nature that he is.
I think he took what he had by the horns in terms of like hardcore stuff. Head Cheese was a bit shit.
I liked Head Cheese.
What was his music called? Like Tango in the Night, Drums in the Night. Pre Tango in the Night, Steve Blackman, when he was just like badass. And he had that little programme with Owen Hart, that was really good.
Yeah, they had the second Lions Den match.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked his stuff with Shane McMahon and the hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he might be a bit of a forgotten man. He started in Calgary, didn't he? I'm sure he started up there. And like, I don't know if he was a Stuart boy, but I'm sure he started up in Calgary. And I'm also, correct me if I'm wrong, answers on a postcard, but I'm pretty sure he just runs like a martial arts centre now somewhere.
Yeah, he does.
What a geezer.
A wrestler died and he was on the news and he looks like the same.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the same.
He's Dorian Gray. He's got the secret of the Fountain of Youth. Yeah, we rate Steve Blackman on this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You are remaking the original and best, apparently, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but are only allowed to cast wrestlers as any of the roles. Who do you choose and why? So, how many Power Rangers was there?
There was White. He was like a special guest.
We'll get rid of White.
The core. Well, wasn't the White also green?
Yes, so it was black, blue, red, green, yellow, and pink.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I felt like green came in later.
They were both Tommy, weren't they?
Yeah, we're both Tommy. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, right.
All right, we'll go with black, blue, red, yellow, pink. And or green / white.
Okay, yeah. So Tommy. Who's going to be our Tommy?
Who's going to be our Tommy? Who's going to be our leader of the team?
Right. Should we do Tommy first?
Let's do Tommy first.
Right, who's going to be our Tommy? Shit. Are we going for like English?
I think we should do Brit Rest. Like, right. Yeah, let's do Brit Rest because it's funnier.
Okay,
who would lead you into a battle against a mighty mech?
It would be Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, who's yours?
Let's have it.
Pops his collar.
We're having it.
Does some holds.
I'm gonna pick Eddie Dennis. I'm picking Eddie Dennis. Also, bad guy, it's definitely Walter. Walter. Before he changes and then him and Imperium just all like combine together, become the mech. So he's our bad guy.
All right.
So we've got Eddie and Saber, right? So white and green. Who's going to be our black ranger? So the black ranger in the movie was a toad. Wasn't that his animal? Wasn't it something like that comical, like a toad, wasn't it? Because they all had they were dinosaurs in the series, and then they went and did that weird journey and became different animals, and people like a falcon and whatever.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to go Black Ranger.
Black one was Guy.
Yeah. Right. Black Ranger.
Thinking of toadish wrestlers.
Toadish wrestler.
James Drake.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. The toad is James Drake.
How are you listening, Toad?
Who's the one that doesn't know how to properly morph? Okay, cool. So Blue Ranger was Billy, who was like the tech guy, the nerdy one. Like.
Okay, right.
So we've got our toad. We've got our leader. So who's gonna be our geek? Who's gonna be our tech expert?
Who's a geek?
I'm gonna pick John Briley.
I've only met John once, so I can't like. I can't
look at him trying to politic his way into a bucket of progress.
Please, John. You're not a geek. It's fine. No, I honestly don't know how much of a geek he is. He could be a mega geek.
He's a robot.
If I meet him again, I'll ask him. John, okay. You geek, brother.
Yeah, he's my Blue Ranger. So who's your tech guy?
Oh,
come on.
Oh, man, who's your tech guy?
Who's someone dead smart that you know? I mean...
Who's the smartest wrestler I know? You see...
I mean, I know who you should pick. Blue Ranger should be G-Man. Tech wizard,
yeah,
G-Man.
Yeah, true, you are right. I was thinking I would have put Eddie Dennis as...
Oh,
because
okay.
He was a teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you're right, actually. Yeah,
you did, all right.
It's going to be G-Man.
So, okay, so we've got reds, yellow, and pink left.
Yellow and pink with
the ladies, uh-huh. Yes. Both very charismatic and very talented fighters. So we were looking for charismatic, talented fighters.
So we're going pink and yellow first?
Yeah, let's do pink and yellow first, then we'll leave red to the end.
One of them's got to be Danny Luna.
Okay, yeah. I could see Danny as like a no-nonsense yellow ranger.
Just kick the fuck out of you.
Yeah, I'm going with that. Who's going to be our pink?
You know, actually, going back to the Sheldon Graps thing.
Yes.
Man, Aaliyah James.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is a great shout.
She'd be fucking rocking cartwheels everywhere. Back moonsault knee drop.
That's
on a Walter's face. Bang.
Yeah. Oh, to be different. I'm going to go with Giselle Shaw for the same reason.
Yeah.
She'd be sick. She'd come in with like a super move. I like that. That's good. All right, so Red Ranger's left. He's kind of like the hothead jock that kind of like goes steaming in. And then like the Blue Ranger, Briley's like, what are you doing? all right, so who's our hothead jock?
Man, who's got a really hot head?
This is a great question, by the way.
Yeah, fuck. Who's got the hottest head?
I'm going to pick Paul Robinson.
Paul's a good one, yeah.
Paul's come on then, you. Yeah, he's not family friendly, but he'd be a good Red Ranger.
Paul or Declan O'Connor. That's a really deep call. So I'd probably have to go with Paul. Or maybe Riddy.
Riddy.
Riddy's a good shout.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Excellent question. Excellent answers, I would say. What will headline WrestleMania 40? I don't even know what WrestleMania we're bloody on.
So what are we on, like 36?
I don't know, mate.
I don't know. Fuck.
Should we just go something really wild?
The reanimated corpse of Gorilla Monsoon. Against, I don't know. Fucking.
The reanimated corpse of Tupac, I don't know.
Against Dominic Mysterio.
Yeah. Oh!
Yeah.
That's not a bad shout, actually.
Gorilla Monsoon.
All right. No. I'm going to go with Dominic Mysterio versus Cain Velasquez.
Fuck, man.
Which sounds insane, but keep in mind what's happened recently. That's my choice.
That might be in a few weeks. Might blow the main event 4 years early. Yeah, shit. They're going to need to. Cain Velasquez versus Rey Mysterio's son.
Yeah.
Main event of WrestleMania 36.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it. That's it.
Yeah.
You can choose five wrestlers from the current main roster of WWE to go into the Hall of Fame. Who would they be and why? Ooh, that's hard. I'm going to go Roman Reigns because obviously I'm going to go with Becky Lynch because she is an absolute badass. I'm going to go with Charlotte Flair for exactly the same reason. This is all just straight off the top of my head because I don't want to overthink it. I'm going to put The Revival in as my tag team. No, actually, scrap that. Yep, Revival as my tag team. And then I'm going to pick a celebrity entry who is going to be Dominic Mysterio.
I'm glad you didn't say the celebrity that I was going to say. Okay. I'm going to say it now.
Okay.
So, who's going in? Mysterio's going in.
Right, Mysterio, yeah.
Orton's going in.
Fair.
He's going in anyway. Is Triple H still active member? Oh, he's already in.
DX.
I mean, they'll probably get like his own induction down the line, but we'll skip him.
Yeah.
Is he still the active roster? Kane?
He comes in, doesn't he?
Yeah,
He's busy being a mayor, but yeah.
Mayor Kane. Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
I'd say definitely she's going to go in. Or maybe... Mickie James on the roster?
I'm not seen her in a while, but she wasn't on Survivor Series or anything this week. But...
Okay, well, there's four. And
okay, who's your celebrity?
My celebrity. Kid Rock's sidekick, Joe C.
Oh, great shout. What a lad.
Yeah.
What a lad. I like that. That's actually, he's not in already. He might be in already.
I think Kid Rock's in, isn't he?
Weird.
Joe C's dead anyway, so...
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying. That's why I don't know if he was in or not. Random. We need more random celebrities. We don't, absolutely don't. Talking of random celebrities, another question from the boss man. Who's the best MJ of all time? Is it Michael Jackson, Montel Jordan, Michael Jordan, Mick Jagger, Mick Jones, or previously mentioned Mickey James? Also, are these the most powerful initials in history? So is it Michael Jackson, Montel Jordan, Michael Jordan, Mick Jagger, Mick Jones, and Mickey James? I'm going to go first. It is the incredibly tall, not one hit wonder, but two hits wonder, Montel Jordan, because that's how we do it.
Wrong, brother. And I did ask, actually, Pip to text me, and he's not texting me. So if you listen to this, boss...
Which you will be.
You're banished from the hotline.
Oh, there you go.
But it is Mick Jagger, isn't it?
Of course it's going to be Mick Jagger for you. Talking of which, who's your top underrated UK musician?
Oh, man. I was thinking about this in the bath, and you will attest, all my thinking goes on in the bath.
It does. He loves a bath.
So, UK musician, I was thinking underrated or underappreciated. Are those like the same thing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I'm going to say Vince Clarke. And if you don't know who Vince Clarke is, put him in your Google.
On your Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you get your music.
He is responsible for hits such as Just Can't Get Enough when he was in Depeche Mode.
Oh, okay. New All Life, right. Yeah.
Only You by Yazoo. He was in Yazoo.
Oh, right, yeah.
He was in Eurasia. Yeah. So he had Sometimes, A Little Respect, all this. Yeah. Absolute wizard of a musician in so many bands, so many hits.
Do you know who Jeremiah are?
Go on.
Glenn Oddle and Chris Waddle.
Oh, fuck.
There's a reference to Diamond Lights and Chris Egan's old entrance music. Talking of old entrance music in the old days, of all the Northwest Masked Wrestler gimmicks, who's your favourite? Who was the most memorable? Who was the most memorable as the worst? My favourite is obviously Ligero, because he is prominent.
Ligero or Furious Allen?
Furious Allen!
Yeah.
Oh, back from Macclesfield, Macclemania, where we used to set up a ring in a country fair. And wrestle between downpours and then ride the ghost train in our gear and get photographs outside casinos with Dom Travis and several other things. But I once enziguried voodoo so hard I thought brain fluid was going to come out of his nose. That was my memory of that. Who was the most memorable for the worst? So who was the shock master?
Did one of Kevin Krev wear a mask?
Yes, it was in fact Krev that wore the mask.
Was it like a... It was Sainsbury's bag on his head.
It was like a blue mask, if I remember, because I obviously wrestled them. But yes.
I think it was a mask that he turned inside out.
Krev, it was. Krev, who was in a four-way tables elimination match with myself, and Dom Travis and Chris Travis were also in that match, who got double underhook pile drivered off the apron by Chris Travis through a table, and in storyline terms, was dead. So, you know, like Poochie died on the way back to his home planet. Krev's a great shout, because...
Another shout for a great one, actually, with Ligero, Lycos.
Is he Northwest? Do we claim him? Because we know his wolf cave in the Northwest.
What's his name? Mondai.
Yeah,
is that like Ghanaian or something?
No, it's a reference to Japanese wrestling.
South African.
No, it's a reference to Japanese wrestling.
Well, he's from.
No, I don't know if we can claim Lycos. I would love to claim him. He was an excellent masked wrestler. And he's an excellent mask ring announcer.
Masked personality.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. We'll leave it to the internet. Can we claim Lycos? I don't know.
There was Kevin Krev. There was Furious Allen.
Allen.
Who has worn a mask? That's the Gambian Invader. Oh God! So many Northwest masked personalities.
It was. Did you ever wear a mask? Any shows? I don't think I ever did it.
I think I did on a holiday camp.
Right.
Which was just I was wrestling. A man by the name of Texas Joe.
Oh, baby! baby!
I don't know if you've heard about him, but he was tag partners with Ric Flair, apparently.
Yeah.
But I was wearing this mask and I couldn't see anything, and he was chucking me around. I was like, stop, please, I want to get off.
I've got a really... Just to pop you. X. The man, the myth, the legend. XCOM, give it to you. That was his entrance music. Right, let's move on because we get caught on that. What football managers would make the best wrestling managers? And then who would you have them manage?
Ooh.
You know, this is the opportunity to do the impression.
Which one's that?
You know the impression. Oh. Yeah. Prominent former England and Fulham manager.
I think Manny Shiner, he played really well up front with Wilson Hall and Crystal Palace.
No, I'm still stuck.
I'm going to go.
Really terrible, sorry.
I am going to actually have Roy Hodgson managing Unsexy Kev, which was a gimmick that was done in Morecambe where Kev, Sexy Kev lost his mojo and became a train spotter. And they seemed like they would hang out together and be boring.
I'd probably have... Phil Brown would be a great manager for someone. A really good mouthpiece. Maybe for Sexy Kev, the actual Sexy Kev. I don't know, I just thought in my head then that like someone like Crater would look really good with Ian Dowie next to him. Which would be pretty good. That'd be really good. Like Ian Dowie marching him out to the ring.
just say that sentence again for me.
Crater managed by Ian Dowie.
John. Who does the edit for the quote of the podcast this week? That's your quote, mate. I'll DM you it later. But Ian Dowie managing Crater, excellent shout. I would have I'd have Neil Warnock. I don't know why I said his name like that, but managing. Oh, who would he be good with? Or I'd have him manage Eddie Ryan, who's a massive Plymouth Argyle fan and was actually wearing a shirt the other day at a Chaos show of when Argyle got promoted, because I used to watch Argyle as a kid and Neil Warnock was manager. And I'd have Eddie Ryan turn on him for leaving the club when we got to the then second division of the English Football League. So there you go. Weird random reference. I'm coming to that one last. What's your favourite flavour of McCoy's crisps?
Steak, innit? Come on, we can't have anything other than steak.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like the texture of a McCoy's crisp. It's solid, innit?
Thick.
Robust.
Girthful.
It's a girthful, robust crisp. Steak's good. I don't know if I can enjoy them now. Because of being a vegetarian, so I'm probably going to say salt and vinegar.
Salt and vinegar is pretty good. Yeah. Salt and vinegar is a good flavour.
You just can't go wrong
with anything.
It. Yeah. Seeing as maybe a bit of a carry on from our round table last time we were here, how would you beat the Fiend?
Oh, God, I'd probably like put clothes pegs on his face and pull his mask off and pull his hair out, stamp on his head. No, I don't know. I think he's a. The supernatural powers that he holds would be no match for anything I could bring to him.
I would lean in.
Politic my way to beating him. Probably.
I'd lean in really close and whisper in his ear that his dad prefers Bo Dallas. And then that's it. He would be destroyed and heartbroken and I would just cover him.
Lean over and whisper in his ear, we gave you a game today. It took a wonder goal to win it. I don't believe in stats and figures. I've seen that Wayne Rooney goal too many times.
Excellent follow on from the football manager thing. Yeah. All right, okay. This is going to be the final question. Who are your biggest influencers?
Oh, man. I've been dying to answer this question.
I know you
man,
have.
Man, it's pretty good.
if you do say so yourself.
No, like, it's really fun because, like, this is a bit of a meat and drink question for me. So, I've always said the wrestling as in a form of entertainment should fall into that same category. Entertainment is a continuum, like you can see it everywhere. Books, films, TV, radio, music, it's always around you, and for that reason, like, you should never exempt those things
correct
from studying. And I've always said as well to young wrestlers, like, probably the only decent bit of advice I've ever given anyone, study your influences, don't copy them. Like, and it's always a shame when you have to have that talk with like a trainer that comes in and he's built like Michael Essien, like double doors, and his favourite wrestlers Kurt Angle or Chris Benoit, and he wants to do like head nips and all this. It's like, no, like, just
work to your strengths.
Yeah, there's more you can find from those wrestlers than fancy fucking wristlock reversals,
right?
And you can find more like bits of stuff that you can take on board. But influences, like, as an entertainment, like, so much stuff I've picked up on, like The Simpsons, man. It's so much like The Simpsons, and, you know, comedy, people like Regal were the first, like, say, study comedians for, like, timing, and, like, just those moments where they'll, you know, they'll pick a certain point of the show to, like, hit something, like a joke or a tale, and it's...
Mm-hmm.
But I was watching, years ago, I was watching a documentary about Bob Monkhouse, of all people. And when he knew he was dying, he did this, like, private... Well, it wasn't really private, you buy tickets, but it was like a stand-up show, because as well as being a game show host...
He was a good stand-up. A
fucking exemplary, like, stand-up comedian. Mm. And he had all these people in the crowd that go on to be, like, really famous, like, comedians, like David Walliams, Matt Lucas, Reese Shearsmith, that fella that does impressions, what's his name?
Angus McGowan?
No, the other one.
I don't know.
John Culshaw.
Okay.
He was there. And Bob Monkhouse said that when he worked with, I think it was Morecambe and Wise.
Okay.
Morecambe and Wise would create this, like, world. They create, like, a little own world. And it wasn't, like, a bubble that they'd just live in. They'd invite people to join them in this bubble. But it wasn't, like, they'd never leave it to drag you in, if you know what I mean. So if you didn't come into their bubble and enter their world and see how they did things, they wouldn't force you. It's like, well, you're missing out, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're just going to do our thing. And then eventually their goal was to get this bubble so full that people on the outside would be like, well, we've got to fucking get in.
Yeah.
And that's what I've, like, brought into wrestling.
Yeah.
And why I've like, since I came back, I think it was, like, 2018, like, the first year was, like, just get used to it. This year was, like, get the bubble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, make that bubble grow and, like, hopefully people will jump in. And, like, there was a match I had in, like, March against the veterans, and, like, afterwards, like, a few people were like, you know, I didn't really see the appeal in Chris Egan, but now I get it. And it's like, right, they're the bubble. Like,
that's a
welcome in, like, come on in.
That's an excellent answer, mate.
Yeah.
Genuinely an excellent answer.
Like, just things like that, they always stick with you. So you can find influences anywhere, but I don't know, wrestling.
No, don't give me a break. I don't want, even want to hear you wrestling. So, that's perfect. Right, nice one, buddy. Let's wrap this up. So where can people find you? What's going on, Chris? Tell us what's going on.
Okay, so I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, you are.
I think I've said this many a time. It's E_is_4, not the number 4, F-O-R.
Yeah.
Lots of things coming up. You find me on Sunday.
Yes.
At Future Shock Tapped. Me and Danny Hope will be in action. It'll be a match you do not want to miss. Please don't miss it. Get your tickets.
There you go.
Coming soon.
All right.
Is the year 2020.
It is.
Which is going to be a very special year. Chris 2020, baby. It's coming. Please keep an eye on the Twitter. You've got a big button at the top that says following. Click it.
Yeah.
It'll turn a light blue.
And
you're following me now. That's where you want to be.
You want to be stepping into your bubble.
You want to be stepping in the bubble. You want to be in it to win it. Chris 2020.
Okay.
There's going to be big things. And now I've announced it, I'll have to...
You'll have to stick to it now.
I'll have to stick to it.
Cowbilly.
Give me a week. It's open. It's out there.
What's the hotline number for people?
The hotline number is... Number is 07936. You got those? Write the rest down. It's 267-846. I've been keeping the hotline shut until we did this podcast, but now it's going to be open again.
So floodgates are open.
Yeah, the floodgates are open. Step into the bubble, baby.
Right. Okay. Well, there you go. Thank you very much, Chris, for coming on and sharing your story/stories. It's been a pleasure. I think there's going to be a lot to take away from this episode. If you ever want Chris to come back on, let me know. I know you do. There is definitely a group of you, and we'll see what happens. Coming up in the future, I am still going to do my Johnny Saint project, where in the same ilk of Brian versus Goliath, the Rey Mysterio Kurt Angle feud, and the John Moxley William Regal feud. So that will be coming up. Hopefully it's going to be next time you hear Tuesday Night Draw. And hopefully I'm going to get some guests on as well in the future. But keep your eyes peeled. I'm still making a decision about what I'm going to do for the Hall of Fame this year, because I potentially might change it, because at the minute the format's really complicated. Cheers, Jim. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week on Tuesday Night Draw.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.